European Rugby Champions Cup quarterfinals are here with eight formidable teams and four massive matches, one of which is a repeat of this classic from 2008 between Munster and Toulouse.
And it's all over! And it's Munster over that line again! It is time to open up that Cardiff treasure chest again!
While these two are no strangers to meeting in finals either.
Is it Bastereau again? Champions know it. They've taken a step there towards history. Over to you, Clement.
Speaking of familiarity, Leinster and Wasps do it all again.
33 points to 6. That is a thumping here in Dublin for Leinster. A very dispiriting day for those in blue. A huge landmark win for this Wasps team.
And Glasgow head south for an almighty test against the holders.
The kings of the continent, the Champions Cup winners, and the new name on the trophy, the 11th name, is Saracens.
On the first ever EPCR European Rugby Show, you'll hear from Issa Nathewa, Lee Jones and Damien Shilley during our in-depth preview of the Champions Cup quarterfinals. There's a look ahead to the last eight in the European Rugby Challenge Cup. And we speak exclusively to Saracens and England fullback Alex Good. Hello and welcome to the show. I'm James Burridge. The pool stage gave us 326 tries, eight qualifiers for the European Rugby Champions Cup quarterfinals, and I'm joined by two esteemed guests in the rugby world, Tom May, formerly of Northampton, Toulon, Newcastle for so many years, and of course EPCRugby.com's Emma Thurston, to look ahead to a massive weekend in Europe. Guys, great to see you today. I know, Tom, you've been busy watching the Premiership as well this weekend, and obviously when you get to this business stage, it's a fascinating time of the season, isn't it?
It is. It's crazy. You know, you look at the teams that are through into the quarterfinal stages this year, and there's some real big monsters in terms of, you know, the lineups, the matchups. Exciting week ahead, I think.
And Emma, I know from a fan's perspective, because you keep a close eye on the social media, there is a growing interest now, isn't it? Because the pool stages are busy enough, but now people begin to think, right, I think I can pick a champion now.
Yeah, absolutely. We put out a question on at Champions Cup and at ER Challenge Cup. Who is your favourite to win the title and why? And already everybody's starting to nail their colours to the mast. We had loads of responses and a real broad split. There's a lot of people saying that the Munster are going to do it this year and do so for Anthony Foley. Wasps are looking formidable. Saracens, obviously, reigning champions. So there's plenty of opinions out there and we're looking forward to finding out some more.
Come on then, Tom. Your two biggest moments from the pool stages then?
I think they involve the same teams. Glasgow and Leicester, the two fixtures there were mind-blowing. You know, there's not many teams that will put 80 points past Leicester side with a real big European history behind them. You know, 43-0 in one of those games. That really hurt Leicester and was a bit of a sign about where they are, but also a bit of a sign about where Scottish rugby is and also the rugby within Glasgow. I think Gregor Townsend has done a brilliant job with them, and their matchup this weekend against Saracens is really huge. I think two teams that play on a 4G surface, you know, they'll look to try and run. Two massive threats in Russell and Hogg. They're the games from the pool stages that stuck out in my mind.
And of course, we can't ignore the emotion intensity of Munster at the moment after the death of Axel. It just seems to be inspiring them game after game right now.
Yeah, I think the tragic circumstances of his passing, it almost focused their minds and channeled their attention into their rugby. And we've seen a massive turnaround in terms of their performances and their form. So playing on that emotion, you know, we've seen it with Irish sides before. The emotional side of that is really big for Irish teams, and I think they'll use that to their advantage.
That's all to come. Stand by for an in-depth preview of the four intriguing Champions Cup matches that lie ahead at the start of the knockout rounds.
Check out the Edinburgh 2017 section of EPCRugby.com to secure your place for an outstanding rugby experience at BT Murrayfield. With the final of the Challenge Cup at 8 p.m. local time on Friday the 12th of May and the final of the Champions Cup the following day at 5 p.m. local time.
So, four massive quarterfinals for us to preview. We're going to discuss in chronological order. Leinster Wasps then, Tom. I mean, wow. How about this for the first game? 3:15 kickoff in Dublin at the Aviva Stadium. It's top of the Premiership against top of the Pro 12. These two sides have met four times in the last two seasons. Mustn't forget that. There have been some thumping scorelines. A victory for Leinster, even a draw. But most recently, this English side, the one which is flying high in the Premiership as well, remember, they've had it all their own way.
33 points to 6. That is a thumping here in Dublin for Leinster. A very dispiriting day for those in blue. A huge landmark win for this Wasps team.
It's a super seven for Wasps. Dai Young and his squad can now prepare for another European quarter-final.
Matchups galore for this one, Mr. May. So how about this for a start? Sexton against Cipriani.
That's a lively one, isn't it? I think in terms of your balanced fly halves and probably the fly half you want to sort of lead you through the quarterfinals, Sexton will be your man. But Cipriani can pull something out of the hat at any time. And I think he's... Combine him with Gopeth. Mm. I think those two players are really key to that Wasps outfit. You know, the players that they've got to pull, you know, in terms of their running lines and their running ability, it's frightening for Leinster to have to try and defend against that.
And the one thing, Emma, I find remarkable about Johnny Sexton, he's done it before in big European finals against Northampton. I remember that one in Cardiff in particular. But no matter how many times teams target him, he always gets back up. He just seems so resolute as a 10.
Yes, he does. I mean, physically, he goes through huge amounts during matches. He is targeted. He's every fly half is, I'm sure Tom will tell you that. And
he
yet...
was a bit soft and squidgier than Johnny Sexton.
Bit of a small guy at 10.
but he comes back and he's so cool, calm, collected. He's got that experience. He's done it before. And as Tom says, he's the man that you want to lead through an experience like this at the Aviva Stadium.
I think there's one thing you could say about Sexton, though. He probably gets involved in those situations perhaps a bit too much, finds himself at the bottom of a ruck when he's your key player to get you around the field. He likes that confrontational side of it. And there's an argument to say you should probably get out of there a bit more.
It won't have been that long since England-Ireland in the same stadium. How much is that going to be lingering on the English minds? I'm thinking of the Joe Launchbury's, for instance, the James Haskells, who know quite well what happened a couple of weeks ago, and that surely is playing at the back of their minds. They want to get one back against the Irish, don't they?
I think so. You know, going back to a stadium where they were obviously pretty disappointed not to get that Grand Slam, that'll channel their attention into trying to turn Leinster over. But I think when you're back with your club side, you're just focusing on achieving something with your mates, the blokes that you turn up to training with week in, week out, put in all the hard yards in through pre-season. That's where competitions like this are so good, because you get the opportunity to achieve with them.
Well, Leinster are definitely the team to watch right now. 31 tries in their pool stages, and their utility back, their skipper, Easton Athewa, he leads the standings with 6 tries, so definitely a player to watch. And he knows how hard it's going to be at the Aviva this Saturday.
Well, you just look at the last 12-month calendar and what they did to us last year, and they're a world-class side. They're one of the best attacking teams in Europe. They've got some star players and world-class players, and they really play as a team. So, you know, we're on the back end of two poor performances last year that they put, you know, 40-plus points on us. So we know their strengths, and we have to combat that and then also be able to play our game.
Tom, tell me about the Stuart Lancaster effect as well, because he's kind of coming under the radar working with Leo Cullen and everybody else. Do you think there is a noticeable impact since Stuart Lancaster's been there?
Yeah, I think it's probably taken some time, but I think it's happened the way Stuart Lancaster would have liked. You know, he's gone back into that coaching role as opposed to sort of being that point of contact for where he was with England, and I think that suits him as an individual. And, you know, I think Leo Cullen's paid attention to the contribution that he's made since his arrival. And you'd have to say, with them being involved with the Pro 12 and where they are, you know, he's had a good effect.
I think the whole dynamic at Leinster, when we went and visited them, there's such focus. You know, last season they didn't deliver in Europe. And Leo said to me, he said, you know, I didn't enjoy watching the latter stages. Issa said the same. You know, they want to be there. They know that Leinster should be at the top of the European competition and should be fighting for honours every single year. And they've got 3 titles. They want 4. Toulouse have got 4. They want that. The drive is huge. And that will, I think, stand them in great stead at the Aviva on home soil.
The kind of elephant in the room, of course, is the Lions selection, which Warren Gatland makes on April the 19th. And, you know, Leinster are going to be missing some key players. Carney, no, he slip. Others as well wanting to make a name for themselves. I'm looking at the likes of Ringrose, Henshaw potentially. I mean, those are some firecracker players who could really light up the stage.
Well, I think the good thing for Gatland in terms of his selection is that there's a fair bit of strength of depth, especially in specific positions. You know, second row, you look at that, that's frightening in terms of, you know, trying to make a choice from there. But Henshaw and Ringrose, you know, they were almost touted as right. They're going to be your Lions starters. I wonder whether they've sort of dropped out of that selection slightly. So this is a real opportunity. You know, you move out of the Six Nations into the Champions Cup. That's where Gatland's now looking.
Mustn't forget the set piece as well, because Launchbury against Toner, I mean, that has got licking your lips big time, hasn't it? Toner has been a huge presence in the lineout. And Launchbury, I mean, I was a big fan of what Courtney Laws did in the Six Nations, but actually you see what the work ethic of Joe Launchbury is. And he just quietly gets on with it, doesn't he? But in the loose, he's just become this absolute beast now, hasn't he, Joe Launchbury?
Yeah, they're both fairly sizable blokes, aren't they, wandering around the field or plodding around
the field. 6'9", 6'10" is ludicrous, isn't it?
Probably
like to guess.
More than a foot taller than me.
That's more difficult.
But he is, Devon Toner, you know, he's been a big hit with Ireland, obviously, and has got a huge amount still to give for Leinster. But, you know, as you say, Launchbury's been brilliant. And Haskell will want to make a statement because that's just the way he is. He's one of those guys that, you know, he's on the big stage. Nathan Hughes as well. I think he was good during the Six Nations and arguably could have started that last game.
Prediction time, Thurston.
Leinster just.
Mr. May?
Well, I was going to stay the same, but you know, I think it's going to be really close. Hopefully, it'll be a dry day, you know, yeah. And there won't be that sort of drizzle that we saw during the Six Nations. I think, Leinster just.
You want that fast track, don't you? You want to see both sets of backs really going for it, and then the forwards just smashing each other.
3:15 kickoff local time on Saturday, 1st of April. BT Sport in the UK, BN Sports in France, and Sky Italia in Italy. Next, then, on the EPC European Rugby Show, we'll look ahead to another tasty looking encounter in Ireland.
Remember, you can watch highlights from the Challenge Cup and Champions Cup knockout round matches presented by Heineken. Available 12 hours after the final whistle. Head to epcrugby.com for more information.
Munster to lose the second quarter-final on Saturday, 5:45 kick-off local time at Thomond Park. A repeat, of course, of the 2008 final, which Munster won 16-13 in Cardiff. Tom, these two teams, well, they are European heavyweights. Munster, we alluded to it earlier, they are riding on a tidal wave of emotion right now since the tragic death of Anthony Foley.
Yeah, they find themselves second in the Pro 12. Their form has been transformed. Blaendale at 10, I think, has been outstanding for them. But also, if you look at the flip side of that, Toulouse, you know, you start to think, oh, well, they're European heavyweights. Well, they're actually the 10th in the top 14. They're almost in here, sort of through the back door. Compare them to the other sides in the quarterfinals, and they're probably the weaker side of the lot. So you'd have to think Munster, with that emotion, with their form, will be strong favourites for this fixture.
Did you ever play at Thomond Park?
Yes.
Tell me what it's like being an opponent trying to win there.
You get the emotion of the place as soon as you walk in, you know. Remove the tragic circumstances of this year and it's still there. Rugby is the lifeblood of Munster. You know, the songs that they sing in the crowds are unbelievable. And certainly when we went down there as a team with Newcastle, it was two contrasting clubs in terms of where we were. Newcastle trying to build a club within the Premiership and within Europe. Munster, massive European history, massive club, massive stadium, with a load of Munster mad fans in the crowd.
Well, one man who's followed Munster home and away during that triumphant season back many years ago, that 16-13 final in Cardiff 2008, Mark Meehan from the Munster Supporters Club. And Mark, we've been talking about the emotional intensity, but I mean, Thomond Park, probably one of the most intimidating places to play. You guys certainly play your part, don't you?
Yeah, I think we do, but I would say intimidating is the wrong term. Our ethos around Munster Rugby is to make people feel as welcome as possible. So it's quite a jovial place to come and watch a match. It's intimidating in the sense of the noise, but within the stands it's very not.
And we've looked at the emotion that Munster have within their performances over in many, many years. But how has the emotion channeled performances this year with the passing of Axel Foley?
You know, tragedy is never easy, you know. But also a part of tragedy, I suppose, is trying to understand it and then not move on, but very much focus on the future, you know. And I think a lot of credit goes to a young team that managed to deal with such tragic circumstances, and kind of from that harness and energy. But, you know, sometimes in rugby, I think only emotion takes you so far. I think their processes are very sound and they're stepping ahead in the right direction while embracing everything that Axel would have stood for, you know, which is that kind of confrontational, upfront and quite tactical rugby, I would say.
And Mark, you mentioned that on the field. What's impressed you this season in terms of the performances? What can you see that the drivers are from a Munster rugby point of view?
You know what, I think they're working pretty well now on a hybrid model. If you look back to 06 and 08, they had a pack that were unrelenting in terms of physicality, you know, kind of a we're fitter than you approach. But then on the back end of it, they had a 9 and 10 that were very tactical and very up heads up rugby. And I think when you look at Conor Murray now and Tyler Blenendell, what they give us is that kind of really tactical approach behind the pack that are quite physically dominant and obviously didn't help by that whole Thomond Park relationship with the fans. There's certain times in a game where that can be overwhelming and we're starting to see that more and more again.
And your memories of that 2008 final, Mark, I mean, it was your second, I think, at the time, back in Cardiff. It really kind of set Munster out, didn't it? So many times you got near and far. This time, you know, that you were beginning to make a massive reputation for yourself as winners. I think you only have to see what's happened to Clemore to know how very close you can get, but actually get no cigar, can you?
Yeah, that is true. It's a tough road, you know. Recently, particularly now when we have less folks in each group, it makes it a lot more tenuous to get to the final stages. 08, I suppose we had a good season in 08. I think what we added at the time was the centre partnership of Maffey and Tupoki. And then on the wings, you had Doug Howlett. And Doug Howlett, actually, at the time, we could all see him as a kind of a mentoring figure. So that brought a real attacking options on the back line. Up front, obviously, then you had the international pack with O'Gara and Stringer just making the right decisions. I think O'Leary actually had broken into the team at that stage. So I think the elements that were there then, you can see quite clearly we're on a similar path at the moment. A young team, an exciting team. And hopefully, with the right conditions and the right game plan, I think we might progress beyond the quarters to the semis.
Well, Mark, thanks for coming on. I really appreciate it. I've got to ask you, though, it's been written down here that you have described Tom May as honest and hardworking. Are you a relation of his or something?
Not at all. I'm a big rugby fan, and I watched that gent many a time play different clubs. And you are correct. He's hardworking and honest. So, Tom, I can stick up for you in that sense.
You're my best friend.
Check in the post.
Thanks very much.
Mark, great to have you on. Thanks very much.
Have a nice day. Goodbye.
There's one game that stands out for me commentating on a game there, and that was that, I think it was a pool match between Munster and Northampton when O'Gara slotted a drop goal. I think it was 44 phases and we were well into injury time by this. Are they the only team in Europe who you think have the ability to play like that? You know, play endless phases and have, I suppose, the confidence and maybe a little bit of swagger to say, yeah, we can still do this.
I think in times gone by, you could sort of pin them as a team and say, right, they've got the patience and the ability to go through phases. And then when they had O'Gara, you knew that he'd slip back into the pocket and just choose his moment. I think now you look at the other side, there are other teams that can compete with them. Saracens certainly can do that. But, you know, I think they're riding on a wave, as you say. CJ Stander is massive for them physically and as a fulcrum in their back row. I think he's got a big part to play.
Emma, there's one other back row forward who's going to be wanting to make a name again, and that's Peter Omani, who has put in a fantastic performance against the English at the Aviva. It was interesting reading some comments in the week, certainly from O'Gara, I think it was, who said, actually, he still needs to improve his fitness. If there was one person who was slightly critical about him, it was his own coach. And yet Omani, in the conditions, is probably one of the most difficult back row forwards to play against.
He's a real challenge in terms of his physical presence and what he does on the field, but he's also just a huge leader for them. We've talked about the circumstances all around this season and going to Tottenham Park at the weekend, there will be a huge amount of emotion. I think there'll be a lot of pressure on the players as well. They want to deliver and carry on this form, this season, all the way through until the very end. And he'll be the one that will galvanise the squad and just get them together and make sure that the emotion of the occasion, the experience of all the players comes to the fore and they do deliver. Because I think Toulouse hopefully will turn up and they'll turn up strongly, but I don't think they'll have enough to counter the physicality of Munster, the likes of Stander and Omani, and he'll put through all of his fitness reserves in this game and going through the knockouts for sure.
Well, they're two very similar teams because Munster, and they've got the pedigree, but Toulouse are almost trying to reinvent themselves again, aren't they? They had the peak, they had a bit of a dip where they went to places like Edinburgh and came unstuck, and now they're trying to build themselves. But, I mean, you've mentioned it, Tom, already. It's not going according to plan, in the top 14 at the moment, isn't it? So Dusatoir is going to have to really rally the troops.
Yeah, definitely. And you feel that Toulouse have been in a bit of a transition for a number of years now, even when Guy Noves was there. They lost an ability to try and dominate games. I think that their lack of structure really affected them there. And they don't really have an impact now within their domestic league or in Europe. You know, they lost two games in the pool stages. They don't have that impact that they had before. And you just feel that, you know, they've got the players. And there's a big question mark as to why then they can't translate that into performances.
I think they're almost going to have to manufacture some belief there. That swagger that they used to have of old and real, we're to lose, you don't push us about, we know how Europe works and we'll beat you. They have to take that to Tottenham Park or otherwise it's going to be difficult.
Conor Murray, he was missing for Ireland. Not quite sure whether he's going to feature, but he is the beating heart of Munster, isn't he?
Yeah, definitely. And if he's missing, then that's a big, not a weakness, but it's a big point for Toulouse to say, right, look, they're missing one of their talismen. You know, let's go after this side. They're not as strong as they could be. But he's a lion for sure. You know, he's going to start. He's being potentially linked up with the captaincy. He's one of those players that has such a big influence on the teams that he's playing in. His ability to snipe in and around those rucks, but also pull in defenders and create space in there that allows his runners to get into holes as opposed to running into big defensive brick walls. I think he's brilliant in that area.
And on the question of emotion, I spoke to a few players about this last week. You can almost exhaust yourself from that, can't you? Obviously, it's an undeniable force right now in Limerick, but you've got to be extremely careful that it doesn't become too powerful.
Yeah, and I think, you know, they will have used that. Certainly when the tragic circumstances immediately they happened, they would have used that to try and galvanise themselves. But a lot of the outside focus on the emotion will be looking at that and saying, right, that's the reason why. I reckon within camp, they've just taken that out completely. It's all at the back of their mind and they're saying, right, everything we do now, we do in memory of Axel for this season, but it's not going to be at the front of their minds. It's all about performances on the day. And you're right, if you get too caught up in the emotion of it, performances actually tail off. So if it's a way of pushing yourself and driving yourself forward, then use it, but then take it out of the equation.
Tomen Park, Limerick, exciting, intensive, it's almost intimidating at times. 5:45 local time kickoff then on Saturday the 1st of April. You can see it on Sky Sports in the UK, beIN Sports in France and Sky Italia in Italy. So that's Saturday's matches. There are two more huge Champions Cup quarterfinal matches to look forward to and we'll do that next.
You're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
And it's James Burridge here looking ahead to the European Rugby Champions Cup quarterfinals in the company of Tom May and Emma Thurston. The third match of the last eight weekends takes place at Allianz Park in North London and sees Champions Cup holders Saracens up against Glasgow Warriors. Kickoff there, 1 o'clock local time, Sunday the 2nd of April. Well, Saracens are flying at the moment domestically, Tom, and they look many people's team to be in Europe once again.
Yeah, I think that, you know, they've recently had all of their internationals back from Six Nations duty and certainly their performance against Bath was frightening. You know, for those others that know that they've got to come up against them, they look rejuvenated by the arrivals of Billy Vunipola. Owen Farrell is back to his best. I think they're looking really strong candidates to push on in this competition. You know, they're alive in both their domestic and European competitions.
Well, let's speak to one Saracens man who knows all about lifting titles. Great to have the England and Saris fullback Alex Good on the programme. Alex, hi there. Welcome to the programme.
Hi, guys. How are you getting on?
Great to have you with us. Tom and I actually saw you recently at Allianz Park against Bath, and you really looked as if you had that swagger back at Saris. You've got the internationals back and you're playing with a real sense of purpose right now.
I think we take a lot of pride in our culture and togetherness and what it means to play for Saracens, and I think there's no better time to show that than, you know, the international guys had a massive campaign playing in huge games, big stadiums, and, you know, they come back to Saracens and, you know, to a man, every single one of them was outstanding, really, and just, you know, took the lead for everyone else. And I think to have those guys come back and not take a backward step and take the level even higher, it speaks volumes about them and what it means to them to be a Saracen.
And Alex, in terms of this weekend coming, you've looked at Glasgow, obviously, and seen their poor performances. What did you take from it? What are you expecting from them?
Look, I think Glasgow have improved massively over the last couple of years. You know, they're Pro 12 champions previously, and yeah, they're a top side. And yeah, most important thing for them is they've got players who are very used to playing in big games. They're a top side. We've got a lot of international guys from the Scotland team who have only been getting better and better. They've got a lot of confidence in their game. Clearly, they're a very dangerous team. They like to move the ball. You know, Finn Russell is the conductor for them and is very dangerous. But yeah, their back three, just name a couple of guys, very elusive. And if you kick badly and give them opportunities on the front foot, they can cause a lot of problems. But, you know, I think without talking everything about them as well, you know, they don't get this far and don't win trophies as they have without having a good set piece and good defence. So very dangerous side and one we're wary of. But that said, you know, we're a top side. You know, we're the champions of Europe and... And there's a reason for that, that we're a top-class side and you know, want to make sure that we play to our potential.
Goody, you mentioned Finn Russell. How do you shut him down? He's key to them. England did it so well in the Six Nations. Do you take a leaf out of their book and really focus on how you defend against him?
Well, look, I think Finn Russell, George Ford, I think anyone, if you put them under too much pressure and you put them on the back foot and you take away, close them down, take away all that time, can make anyone look average. And at times, we've put huge pressure on Khan Fortalili and George Ford at the weekend and kicked a few balls out on the floor. And you can say that's their mistakes, but they're being pressurised into those mistakes. They don't make them when they've got time. They don't make them for England, invariably. And we went after them, and I think the same will be for any fly half we come up against. And certainly England did a fantastic job against him, and you know, he didn't have his greatest game that day. And I think if we can do a similar job, as you said, then we'll go a long way to... doing pretty well.
Alex, each player has their idiosyncrasies, and I've got, when we watch you with the ball in hand out in front, it's that little jinxy hop, step and a jump that you do, which 9 times out of 10 every defence buys it. You must be, can you tell us what's going through your mind when you're trying to weave a little bit of magic and trying to catch those defences napping?
Well, I think we should put that in a coaching manual as the technical term, the hop, skippity, jumpy thing.
It's right out there, believe me, I got it from Eddie Jones.
Yeah. I think it's not as well. Everyone's buying it. I like to think it's not just a con man's trick. Maybe there's some use to it. But look, I think you know, I've had a big background of playing at fly half and being in that position, and I see my role perhaps slightly different, as well as being a strike runner outside and making creating holes. I see it as a lot of creating space for the wingers who are the natural finishers. You know, my job is to, you know, not take up their space and try and do their job, is to keep the space for them and find space for them to manoeuvre, really. And if I can do that and give them half a yard, then the likes of Sean, Chris Wiles and Chris Ashton, we have unbelievable finishes at Harrison's. And, you know, that's kind of my prerogative, really, is to put other people in space as much as myself.
Did you have a hop, skip and a jump on me? If you got across the gate line, it was a good day, wasn't it?
Yeah, not like that. Certainly not against Saracens. But you mentioned you played at fly half a fair bit. You know, there was one moment against Bath where you received the ball in the bottom right-hand corner of your own 22 and you finished the try off in the top left. Noticing that space is something that's really key from fullback. Is that something you work on specifically, or does that come more naturally to you?
It's a tough thing to really work on apart from watching rugby. I think you just got to have a good game understanding, anyone in a game to this day and age, and just watching rugby and analysing it a bit. But really, I think those moments, without trying to sound too arrogant, I don't think there's much practice you can do for it. I think it's more an understanding of you being closed down and you've got to find ways out of it. And you know, I'm lucky that the team were very alive to that. They're always alive to me changing my mind, perhaps, or moving the point of contact instead of kicking and running. And they were all alert to it. And you know, it was a brilliant team try, because I think everyone pretty much touched it or was involved in some way. And you know, I can say that I was pretty much blowing when I scored. I needed some help getting up. I think it's been a long, you know, 10, 11 weeks out, and that was a length of the field try.
It's great to see you back playing rugby, Alex, apart from anything else. Just a final one. Lions is obviously lurking at the back of the players' minds, and I was watching Chris Ashton yesterday and thinking, is he an outside bet? Because he has got devastating... You're shrugging your shoulders and looking at me as if there's a weird smell gone off in the studio, Tom May. But he has been talked about. I mean, Alex, what is Ashton like to play alongside? And do you think there is any chance that he might get some sort of call-up from Gatland?
You know, I can't speak about what Gatland's looking for. And, you know, all I can say is that the Six Nations was incredibly competitive. And all the teams have had you know, a good chance of putting their best foot forward. And I think no position more than the wings is up for grabs massively. Look, Chris is incredibly sort of infectious to play with in terms of attack. He always wants to get the ball, always wants to attack from everywhere. He's always there, always wants it, and it does rub off. He's had a great impact on a lot of the guys in terms of their support lines. And you know, if anyone makes a half break, he will be there. And, that's a wonderful thing to have. And, you know, I think he's a brilliant player to play with. He's great to have on our side. And, you know, it's obviously a shame he's leaving at the end of the year, but yeah, good luck to him, and hopefully we can win something before he goes.
Alex, great to have you on the programme. Thanks very much for joining us, and good luck this weekend against Glasgow.
Thanks, guys. Great to be on the show. Cheers.
So that's Alex Good, who was back playing for Saracens in a real rich frame of form in the Premiership of the weekend, looking ahead to this Glasgow quarter-final. And it's a history-making quarter-final for Glasgow, the first time they have qualified for the last eight. Here's their wing, Lee Jones.
It was an aim that the club have had, you know, over the past however many years, so to finally achieve that was massive for the club as a whole, and the players were obviously delighted. And the manner in which we qualified as well in that last game was pretty special. So it's an achievement in itself, but then we obviously need to look forward from there. But to have made that quarterfinal is a big step, and something we've been looking to do for so long.
Tom May, it's a big step by Glasgow to get here, but do they have the game to reach the semi-finals?
Yeah, I think they do. I think the fact that both sides play on a 4G pitch means there's no side coming into it and sort of wondering about what the surface is all about. They have a really good attacking game, but they need to be on the front foot, and that's what Saracens will be really keen to stop. That's what allows the really good players like Finn Russell and Stuart Hogg to put their game into place. They get the momentum within the game, and then they have an ability to influence that. But Saracens are amazing at stopping people at source, beating them to the gain line, and that's something that Glasgow really have to think about in their preparation for this weekend.
Both teams play on 4G pitches, which gives you the impression that there's going to be a high-scoring, high-octane game. Conversely, best defence wins?
Yeah, and that's something that Saracens pride themselves on, right? Their work rate is written all over Allianz Park, isn't it, for everyone to see. Work rate and humility, that's something that stands out for them. So you'd have to think that Saracens' defence will be capable of nullifying the attack that Glasgow have. But having said that, I think we could be in for a really cracking game here, because I think two sides that will want to go at it.
And there's plenty of reaction already on social media from the fans and players alike, Emma.
Exactly. A lot of the fans see the strength of Saracens. Stuart Lambert on Facebook: Saracens will win 100%. Too good. Mark Patterson, again on Facebook: Saracens are too strong for anyone else. But there are a number of Glasgow fans equally that are just as positive. We've got lots of emojis from Colin John: Glasgow Warriors, punchy emoji, rugby ball and a blue heart. So, you know, there's a lot of Saracen support, knowing they're at home, knowing they've done it before. But Glasgow Warriors fans are pretty positive about the fact that they're going to make history and keep on doing so.
Gregor Townsend's worked so many miracles already, Tom. Could he do another one? Give me your prediction.
I think it's just a step too far. I think they've done brilliantly, and I think should they have come up against some or one of the other teams, they would have more of an opportunity to progress to the semi-finals. I just think they've come up against a red and black wall here in terms of Saracens. Owen Farrell's been brilliant. Vunipola, both Vunipolas for that matter, have a massive impact on Saracens, and I think they're just going to be too strong.
Emma?
I agree with Tom. I think Glasgow Warriors will put out a great performance, because they've looked to get to this stage for so long. They've knocked on the door and they want to show their true colours. But Saracens squeeze teams. They know exactly how they want to play their own game. The intensity that they play out, the personnel that they've got and the form they're in, it's got to be Saracens.
Well, it's going to be mouthwatering, isn't it? Saracens against Glasgow Warriors at Allianz Park. 1 o'clock kickoff local time on Sunday, the 2nd of April. And again, this one on Sky Sports, beIN Sports and Sky Italia. Next, we'll preview an all-French clash that's a very similar matchup in the Champions Cup.
I'm Gregor Townsend, and you're listening to the EPCR European Rugby Show.
Yes, Clermont-Auvergne and Toulon met in both the 2013 and 2015 finals, with Toulon victorious on both occasions.
That is it! Toulon are the European champions! Here's their moment when they realise the dream!
And the sports fantasy league team have done it again. They've got the hat-trick. They are European champions for a third time in a row.
What a performance, and yet again, Clermont are the bridesmaids.
Well, their quarterfinal is a 4:15 kickoff local time this Sunday, the 2nd of April, at Stade Marcel Michelin. Tom May, you're an ex-Toulon boy. Funny goings on there, in a sense, because it's Mike Ford and Richard Cockrell taking over. You've got Fabien Galthié succeeding. Do Toulon know the way they want to play at the moment?
I think they do. I think they're hamstrung a bit by the people that they have trying to run the game. They're missing Matt Gitto massively. They haven't had a key player at 10 since Wilco left. And I think they've always had a strong focus on the kicking game. Ever since I was there with Philippe Saint-André, it was all about applying pressure to teams and then reacting to the mistakes that they make from that. If they kick badly against Clermont, they will be exposed massively. They're very direct. They've got Nonu and Bastereau in the centres. You know, they're very strong in that contact area. We look at some of their back row players, almost two contrasting sides, but it's a pretty interesting matchup.
Clermont have probably the best all-court game in Europe, don't they, Emma?
I would say so, yes. I think the question mark that comes with Clermont at this stage in the competition is always their psychology. They've been the bridesmaids for so long, but this season, looking through the pool stage and looking through the rugby that they've played and put together, you almost think that that's going to overcome any question marks that they have. You know, the likes of Nick Abendon and David Strettel. Then you've got Camille Lopez and Noah Nakatathi, both of whom are nominated for the EPCR European Player of the Year that's presented by Turkish Airlines. So they've got those individuals that are up there at the very top of Europe, and they just play fantastic rugby. I love watching them play. I really do.
Let's hear from the Clermont captain then, Damien Shulley, who's determined to finally taste Champions Cup success at the third time of asking.
This competition is special, and it's very much there in the history and DNA of the club. All of us have experienced some great European campaigns. Unfortunately, it's ended up with defeat in the final twice. But we're back in the competition, we want to do well, and we're excited. We want to bring the trophy back to the club and to our supporters.
And that fan base, that Clermont fan base, is huge. The travelling army, I think you think of travelling army of fans. I think of Munster, probably Northampton and Leicester, Leinster, certainly Munster, and all those big teams. But Clermont in France probably have one of the best of that yellow and blue army of theirs. How badly have they been waiting for this?
Oh, hugely. You know, he talked of the history of the competition and the club's involvement in that history, but That's fine, but it's very heavily associated with defeat in this competition. So, but I think they've got a good chance this year. I think they'll beat Toulon this weekend. They're really strong at home. That fan base, as you mentioned, will add a dimension to their play. They will feel this is a real opportunity. You know, the other sides in the competition from a French point of view have sort of fallen by the wayside, leaves Clermont at the top with a really good shot at the other big players.
Let's get a French perspective. Let's hear from Gavin Mortimer, the rugby journalist based out in France. Great to have you with us, Gavin. How do you look at this one then? Because we've got three teams, haven't we? Three French teams in the last eight. Which one do you think will prevail here between Clermont and Toulon?
I think Clermont are going to give Toulon a hammering. I was at the Stade Français game and they were very, very poor indeed. I was actually sitting behind a couple of Toulon fans who spent most of the game with their head in their hands. And it's just, they're just a shadow of a team that dominated Europe 3-4 years ago. And yet they've got some quality names in there, but they look like a team. I was watching some of the body language of the players and they look like a team whose morale is shot to bits.
Where did Toulon need to improve? My big question mark sits over their fly half slot. I don't think they've replaced Johnny Wilkinson effectively enough, and I don't think that the players they have in that midfield give them enough ability to change their point of attack. Where do you feel Toulon are lacking at the moment?
No, I mean, I agree with you, absolutely. They've got a decent pack. But Trond Duke last night, he just lacks the authority at fly half that they so desperately need. And as you said, that Wilkinson gave him. And even Gitto, when he was injury-free, I think that's a big blow this season. I feel sorry for Mike Ford because he was relying on him. But no, that's right. I mean, you've got Bastereau and Nonu, great in defence, but they're not going to give you much. You know, Nonu in the 2017 version in attack. And so I just think, and you compare that to Camille Lopez, who has been outstanding this season for me, 67 points in the Six Nations, and just really maturing into the fly half that France has been desperately searching for a decade or so.
And conversely, we're obviously looking at Clermont, and you mentioned Toulon are not where they need to be. What makes Clermont, in your eyes, so impressive? And what will make this season different to many that we've seen before in the European competition, do you think?
I think they're fitter than ever. They've had this big new training facility 18 months ago, and they've got, he's reputed to be one of the a very good fitness conditioning team in place. And we've also just now this may be luck, or it may be the way that they've got a generation of young players coming through. I don't know if you've seen Damien Penaud this season, the son of Alain Penaud, and Jid Raziak, of course, and they've got these young players coming through. And of course, added to that is they've got the experience of people like Para, Lepandre on the flank, who's in good form this season. Rougerie, of course, the ageless Rougerie, who's still going. So I think they've just got experience, youth, and strength across the board. And they've also got, when it comes to Toulon, an absolute thirsting for revenge. Those two finals, particularly in 2013 and 2015, particularly in 2015, that really hurt them. And I think they are focusing so much on Sunday's game. They rested a lot of players at the weekend when they in the game at, against Racing, but they almost, I think that just shows you a measure of their strength of in not just depth, but also their mental reserves, that they were 20-0 down at one stage and they came back to 27-24, but nearly nicked it. So I think although they lost, that wouldn't have done them much harm, and I just expect them to be too strong everywhere for Toulon on Sunday.
And we've got three teams in the European Rugby Challenge Cup, of course, from France. Gavin, La Rochelle, who are blitzing everybody in the top 14 right now, Brive, Bath, and of course Stade Francais travelling to the Ospreys. Of those three, which one do you think could make the final?
I just think La Rochelle, they are the Leicester City of the top 14 this season, and they're 11 points ahead now of Clermont in second, and they just seem to be like Leicester City last year. They just have this unshakable belief every time they run out onto the pitch that they're going to win, and of course they've got some very good players in their side, but by no means the star quality of other teams. But they just seem to have clicked in all areas, and they've got a good coaching team. Xavier Giarbioso seems to be doing good things, and I think they're going to be a real probably the strongest threat from a French point of view. It's going to be interesting to see Brive having a good season, and Stade Francais, they won ugly last night against Toulon, but they won, and I think after the fortnight they've had, that was very important. So they're going to go over to the Ospreys with nothing to lose.
Gavin, great to have you with us. Thanks very much.
Thank
indeed.
You.
Enjoy the weekend.
Thank you.
Gavin Mortimer, the rugby journalist based out in France. Good to have his analysis ahead of the weekend. So you two, panel prediction time.
Clermont. It's fairly simple, I think, for me. I think that they're really confident about where they're playing their game at the moment. And I think Toulon, converse to that, they're all at sea. I think they're very direct. They're pretty one-dimensional. And it'll be fairly easy for Clermont to snuff out any Toulon attacks.
I hope we see plenty from Toulon and they disprove some things, but Clermont,
well,
simple.
The easiest one so far from you two. 4:15 kickoff then, local time, on Sunday the 2nd of April at the Stade Marcel Michelin. It's on FR2 in France, BT Sport, beIN Sport and Sky Italia. Right, time to turn our attention to the EPCR European Player of the Year, of course, presented by Turkish Airlines. Emma, you've been keeping a close eye on this. We're sport for choice at the moment and we're only at the quarterfinal stage.
Exactly. So voting opens after the quarterfinals. And I went up to BT Murrayfield and spoke with Andy Nicol about the runners and riders, starting with Munster's fly half, Tyler Blaendel.
Tyler Blaendel, he's just pulled the strings from Munster. He's got them playing the right places. He's the playmaker. He's made them tick. He's also the goal kicker.
Elliot Daly, Wasps.
Elliot Daly has just been on fire. He's such an attacking player. It's where he plays as he's centre in the wing, but wherever he plays, he's outstanding.
Owen Farrell, Saracens.
Owen Farrell is just the ultimate warrior. I just think he's got such a game face about him. He understands how to win. He's just a complete winner, and he makes Saracens tick.
Tag Furlong, Leinster Rugby.
Tag Furlong has just been the rock that Leinster have built their performances on. He's outstanding in the loose as well. He's one of the best tight heads out there.
Johnny Gray, Glasgow Warriors.
Johnny Gray puts in a level of commitment I don't think I've ever seen from anyone. He regularly tops the tackle count and the carry count. His work rate is phenomenal and his accuracy is phenomenal. He is a phenomenal player.
Stuart Hogg, Glasgow Warriors.
Stuart Hogg has been on fire all season. He is just electric at the moment. He's loving his rugby. He's playing brilliant rugby. He lights up every game he plays in.
Mario Itoje, Saracens.
Well, the reigning player of the year
and he's back up to that level again. He's come back from injury. He's probably not hit the levels which were so high last year, but that proves how good he is.
Joe Launchbury, Wasps.
Joe Launchbury is just consistency personified. He doesn't look like he does a lot, but he does a huge amount. Hugely effective in the tight, but outstanding in the loose as well.
Camille Lopez, Clermont Auvergne.
He's the playmaker for Clermont. He makes them tick. He's a goal kicker. He gets the back line going. He's that little general between the forwards and the backs, and he's a great player to watch.
Conor Murray, Munster Rugby.
Conor Murray, I think, has developed into one of the best scrum halves in world rugby. He controls the game so well. He's a fighter, he's a battler, but he's got the cool head as well, and he is integral to Munster.
Ethan Asewa, Leinster Rugby.
Very experienced player at Nasewa and just a Leinster legend. He's got so much experience. He knows where the trialling is, but more importantly, he knows how to win the European Cup. And it's that level of experience that I think have helped Leinster this season.
Noah Nakatathi, Clermont Auvergne.
He finishes off all the stuff that's created in Clermont, and he's got so much pace. He's so exciting. He's just one of the great players to watch when he gets the ball in hand.
Gary Ringrose, Leinster Rugby.
I think it's hard for Gary Ringrose because everyone is comparing him to the great Brian O'Driscoll, but that's because he's that good. He's maybe not at that level yet, but who was? But he's got that ability, he's got that fight about him as well, which you need an outside centre. He's a class act who will only get better.
CJ Stander, Munster Rugby.
What a ball carrier Stander is. He gets Munster going forward. He gives them the go forward all the time. He gives them the platform to play. And he just is in the heart of everything they do. He's become a hugely important figure down at Munster.
Thomas Young, Wasps.
Thomas Young has been outstanding for Wasps this year. In a team full of stars, he's one of the few players not playing international rugby. But his consistency, his pace, his reading of the game has been outstanding. And he's well worth of being on this list.
As Andy Nicholls' thoughts on the long list of nominees for EPCR European Player of the Year presented by Turkish Airlines. The voting for the award opens on the 3rd of April after the quarterfinals, and voting can be done at epcrugby.com and at our Facebook channels, European Rugby Champions Cup.
Tom, have you ever been a Player of the Year?
In the European Champions Cup?
No,
or
at all.
I have, actually.
Have you?
Yeah.
When was that?
I got it 2 years running at Newcastle.
Get you.
And I came third in the Premiership one.
Third, okay.
Yeah. No, second, actually. I do myself a disservice.
When you get, when they give you a bottle of champagne for Man of the Match, do you drink it straight away? Would you put it, sometimes you get red wine, don't you? Do you put it in the, keep it in the, I suppose.
The red wine was kept for a nice occasion.
Was it?
Champagne's taken into the shower with the lads and passed around, yeah.
Yeah, excellent. So drunk by about 23 different players and the coaches.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Really hygienic.
Is there a player which you think is leading the running at the moment? I mean, it's pretty early stages, but we haven't had the quarterfinals yet. But.
Yeah, I think that's key. You know, once this weekend plays out, we'll lose a lot of those teams, and I think that's where you really start to get those guys all put their hands up for this competition. You know, Lopez will be key for Clermont, perhaps Stander or Hogg from a Scottish point of view. But, you know, if I put my English hat on, I think Elliot Daly's been brilliant. Owen Farrell is consistently of a high level of performance. But Joe Launchbury, he could well be one to take this award from Mauro Itoje.
Well, this is the EPCR European Rugby Show with the aforementioned Tom May, Emma Thurston and me, James Burridge. Great to have your company. And the weekend ahead not only sees the last eight in the Champions Cup, but also the quarterfinals of the European Rugby Challenge Cup. Andrew Kotcher looks ahead.
Edinburgh and La Rochelle get proceedings underway with a match under the lights at BT Murrayfield on Friday. The Scottish side's head coach, Duncan Hodge, believes the prospect of a home final is definitely enough to whet the appetite.
There's some big games before that against very good teams, but, you know, it's something I think we're all aware of, and like you say, it probably does give us that extra sort of 10%.
Edinburgh only lost once in the pool stage, but Hodge says his players are aware of the challenge ahead of them.
For them to be clear by a bit of a distance at the top of the top 14, you know, tells you what a great side they are, and, you know, they carry a lot of strengths, you know, up front and behind, and they're pretty strong in many areas. So, you know, that'll be a really good test for us, and we look forward to that.
On Saturday, we have a repeat of the 1998 Champions Cup final in the form of Bath versus Brive. On that occasion, 19 years ago, Andy Nicol captained Bath to a dramatic one-point victory over the French outfit.
It just became such a special weekend for anyone connected with Bath, and 7,000 fans went out to Bordeaux. And so it was the culmination of so much hard work for a club over the years, from the 80s, when the likes of Roger Spurrell came into the club and John Palmer, these players. I remember meeting them post-98 when we won, and they just said it was the best day in the club's history. And for people like that to say that to me, I was very humble and honoured and lucky to be the captain for that year.
Elsewhere on Saturday, Cardiff Blues crossed the Severn to face two-time Challenge Cup winners, Gloucester.
And it is all about Gloucester. The wait is over. A second European Challenge Cup to add to the one from 2006.
While on Sunday, Stade Francais travelled to Cardiff to play Ospreys, who are the only quarter-finalists to have won 6 from 6 during the pool stage. Remember, you can keep across epcrugby.com for all the latest news on this weekend's fight for the final four in the European Rugby Challenge Cup.
Tom May and Emma Thurston with me, James Burridge, in the studio, looking ahead to the European weekends. Edinburgh La Rochelle at Murrayfield, Tom. And in days gone by, you know, Murrayfield was a fantastic place for Edinburgh. I remember, you know, big wins in the past against the likes of Toulouse, I think it was, a few years back. How big a factor is playing at Murrayfield going to be for them?
I think they'll try and use that to their advantage. Having said that, I think La Rochelle are one of the French teams that are very, very capable of travelling away from home and serving up a good performance. Edinburgh in the lower half of the table in the Pro 12 will be using this to, you know, really hold on to their season. But from a La Rochelle standpoint, they've got guys that they can pin their hopes on. Victor Vito, Brock James has come in and has really given them some stability. But for one player to look out for, he's their most exciting player. Lavani Bottia plays in the centre, can play in the back row as well. He's one to look out for.
They are the surprise package in the top 14, aren't they, Emma? La Rochelle, 10 points clear. It's been an astonishing season.
It has, and a season that no one predicted at the beginning. I think, as Tom just mentioned, that the key to this is they can play away from home. We see so often for French sides, you never know what's going to turn up. It's such a cliche and everyone rolls their eyes when you say it, but it's true. And yet you know that La Rochelle are going to arrive at BT Murrayfield, put their game on the park, and I expect them to win.
Bath brief, Tom. Bath are not having a particularly happy time at the moment. They were pretty well thumped by Saracens in the Premiership on the weekend. They're at home, which I think will probably be pivotal, won't it?
Yeah, I think that could be key. You know, they took a bit of a pasting, let's face it, last weekend against a really strong Saracens outfit. Todd Blackadder, though, you know, said that there wasn't a huge amount wrong with their game. The wheels just came off completely. Having said that, Brive, you know, they knocked off Montpellier, who are flying high in the top 14 and are a really, really strong outfit. So they'll be full of confidence. Be interesting battle.
12:45 kick-off this one at the Rec, Emma. And once the home crowd get behind them, they are a different animal, aren't they, Bath?
Absolutely. And I think that there's a lot of history behind this fixture. You know, the memories that go back to that European Cup final that the fans remember. And I think it stays with the players as well. So there'll be a lot of support behind them. And I'm expecting Bath to turn it around and deliver on home soil.
Saturday, 8:05 at King's Home, Gloucester against Cardiff. Gloucester equally. I mean, Laurie Fisher departing in a bizarre way, really. A huge lot of pressure on David Humphreys to try and bring something, to get something from the season, because that's what the Challenge Cup offers, doesn't it? Silverware. And Gloucester will look at Cardiff and think, you know, we have the beating of this team if we just mentally tune in.
Yeah, if you look at both sides, they're both big clubs that will want to achieve success year after year. And at the moment, they're mid-table in their domestic competitions. But this, as you say, is a real opportunity for them to say, right, well, you know, we've had a successful season. We've lifted silverware. OK, it's perhaps not how they want to be progressing, but this is a genuine opportunity to get something from a season that's falling away for them both.
And big for Wales, for the provincial regions in Wales, because obviously Ospreys will come and talk about it in a minute, Emma, but for Cardiff, you know, they really need to get something from this, because the Pro 12 isn't necessarily delivering for them at the moment.
It's important. It's important for Welsh rugby that they've got regions that are progressing through to the latter stages in competition and really driving that club game alongside the international game in Wales.
Ospreys, Stade Francais, it's on Sunday this one, 5:45 local time at the Principality Stadium. Ospreys, Stade, I mean, that's a difficult one to predict, really, isn't it? Because the Ospreys, they've got some very classy players, haven't they?
They have, and I disagree with you slightly. I think it's pretty easy to call. I think the Ospreys will win that at a canter. I think, you know, there's been a lot said about Stade Francais, but the Ospreys, they're third in the Pro 12. They'll be confident at home, and I think they'll look forward to this. Again, another side that can say, right, you know, we've had a successful season, and that might then kick them on in their domestic competition as well.
Emma?
There's a real feel-good factor around Ospreys in the Challenge Cup this season. They are the story of the Challenge Cup, making history with maximum points. No side has ever done that in the pool stage, and they'll want to carry that on, and I think they will.
Back to the European Rugby Champions Cup. Four quarterfinals, mouth-watering. Tom May, which one are you looking forward to the most?
It's very difficult to look away from Saracens Glasgow, but also from a perspective of having played for them before, I'm looking forward to seeing how Toulon get on at Stade Marcel Michelin.
I'm going to look at the Aviva Stadium. I think Leinster against Wasps is going to be a huge clash. The backdrop of the previous international, the backdrop of last season's performances between the two Leinster Wasps for me.
Is there a surprise package there?
You never know. Toulon could get a result at Stade Marcel Michelin, and that would mix everything up.
You'd be eating a few croissants if your old team won, didn't that one? Wouldn't you?
Is that supposed to be a punishment, is it?
You look like you've worn a few today. No, seriously, I mean, do you think Toulon could surprise us all?
I think they're going to really struggle. And if they do, you know, as Emma said, then they may well find the confidence within their group to kick on in this competition.
Emma, your prediction for the team to lift the trophy come May?
Munster. I think they'll ride on the back of the performances that they've had, the emotion that they're playing with, and I think they'll lift the trophy.
Saracens, I think for me, they're coming into form at the right part of the season. That's what it's all about, that they're a really, really good side when they're in form. And those guys that have come back from Six Nations competition will galvanise them moving forward.
Great lesson. Guys, thanks very much indeed for your company. That's all we've got time for on the EPCR European Rugby Show. Don't forget, it is Leinster Wasps, Munster Toulouse on Saturday the 1st of April, and then Saracens Glasgow, Clermont Auvergne against Toulon on Sunday the 2nd in the European Rugby Champions Cup quarterfinals. There are four Challenge Cup quarterfinals as well, starting on Friday, March the 31st. And you can catch all the live quarterfinal action on Sky Sports, BT Sport, BN Sport, FR Tour in France, Sky Italia. Plus, remember to go to the epcrugby.com for all the stats and facts for the 16 teams across the two competitions. Remember to send us your thoughts and predictions to @ChampionsCup and @ERChallengeCup on Twitter using the hashtag ChampionsCup. And also on our Facebook pages, search for European Rugby Challenge Cup and European Rugby Champions Cup. But for now, from Tom May, Emma Thurston, and myself, James Burridge, it's goodbye.